Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
There is no injunction for such bhaktas to accept the outward dress of renunciation. It is necessary only as long as there is some dependence on public consideration. After receiving vesh, a competent devotee enters into mendicant life, which means every day he must go out and maintain himself by begging. He will not entangle himself in temple construction and other large-scale enterprises. He will live in a solitary hut or in the temple of a grihastha. He must not utilize money for his needs or anything else. He will simply use all his time and energy to chant Hari Nam without offense. Yadav Das Babaji. Respected Babaji, the grihastha bhaktas follow the varnashram system. Therefore, it is possible for a grihastha to become a Vaishnava. If he is excluded from the Varnashram system? Ananta Das Babaji. If only you knew how liberal and magnanimous the Vaishnav Dharma is. It is also known as Jiva Dharma, the religion for all living entities. Every human being from any position has the right to follow the Varnashram Dharma. Those born in the lowest statuses of humanity, known as antijas, can embrace Varnashram Dharma and live as grihastha bhaktas, although they are outside the Varnashram society. Another example is the sannyasi, the highest religious order in the Varnashram system, who breaks his sannyas vows and falls down. Nevertheless, later by association with saintly persons, he may be reinstated in Shuddha Bhakti and live as a grihastha bhakta, although he is now an outcast from the Varnashram society. Those persons and their descendants who are excluded from the Varnashram society because of unlawful actions may take up the process of Shuddha Bhakti by associating with sadhus. They can become grihastha bhaktas, although they have no status in the Varnashram society. Therefore, there are two types of grihastha bhaktas: Varnashram Dharma Yukta, those within the Varnashram system, and Varnashram Dharma Rahita, those outside the Varnashram system. Yadavadas, which of the two is better? Anantadas, Babaji. He who has developed the higher intensity bhakti is naturally the better. As for those who are in either of these two conditions, but are actually bereft of bhakti, the Vyavaharika point of view of materialistic society will adjudge those who are within the Varnashram society as being better of the two. At least they have a locus standi in Varnashram society, while the others are antijas. However, seen from the Paramartika point of view, both are the same. They are both degraded because they are without bhakti. Right? So bhakti is the essential element that one is looking at. But at the same time, there's social consideration. Right? So duties within the Varnashram system that have the element of social status, if one is within the system, then you have a position there, you know, whatever it is. If you don't have a position there, then you follow whatever is the position of someone who doesn't have a position. Right? Quite simple. Because Shuddha Bhakti doesn't depend upon social status. Right? Now, of the two positions, which is better, he makes the point, one that is more advanced in devotional service, that's better. That's how you judge. Not whether you're within or without the Varnashram system. When we say without Varnashram, we mean they accept Varnashram, but they don't have a status within it. That's different from someone who rejects Varnashram. Right? Someone who rejects it, that's automatically Antija. Right? But not well situated. Because an Antija who respects the system but doesn't have a position within it, that's just that one will be able to behave properly. The one who rejects it then will try to, in other words, rejecting the Varnashram system, one tries to take whatever position you like, right? Does that make sense? In other words, if we're rejecting Varnashram, what we see is we don't mind taking positions in Varnashram as long as they have status and it's ones that we're interested in. And not only that, it's not that we'll stick to any one position. We'll try to take as many of them as possible, whatever is favorable for our social status. Does that make sense? So there's a difference in how this works. So here it's the Antijas, he's taking the humble position and functions outside, right? But they have a place. That's the nice thing. Antijas have a position in the Varnashram system, though they're outside of it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yes.
It means it's a person who is outside the Varnashram system. In that case, it's only the Babaji?
No, it means the Babaji is, he's above it, so he's not taking part of it. But we're talking here the Grihastha Bhakta, who, because of his position, just he by nature is in that position. Like, let's say he's a Chandala, right? So he becomes a devotee. So now he's situated in pure devotion. But socially, he may still have the position of a chandala. So he's still outside the system. Or as he says, sannyasi falls down, he gets married. Yes. So he's a grihastha bhakta. So within the devotional circle, he has a position. Mm-hmm. But within the varnashram, he's on the outside of that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So he's saying is that whatever the situation, whether you have a position or not, the actual what's senior is who is a devotee. Because the social, in other words, the social consideration isn't a consideration of what's more advanced or not, what's senior. It's only socially considered. Right? Now, but if one's not a devotee, then one would consider the one within Varnashram is in a superior position to one outside. But for those within devotion, but if they're not devotees from devotional service, they're both in a fallen condition. This one's in a nice fallen condition, one's in a not so nice fallen condition. Does that make sense? Yes.
When you say they're still included socially, but they're included, excluded according to Varnashram, correct?
It means their excludedness is included within the Varnashram system.
But what kind of, I guess, benefits or entitlements does that deny them being outside of the Varnashram system?
There'd be, specific, let's say, leadership roles or, other social marriage and other things like that. Because the point is you marry within your mentality. So if you're an Antija by mentality, by conditioning, you'd want to marry an Antija.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But the point is if you're a devotee, you're going to marry a devotee Antija. You don't want to marry someone who's not a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the real position.
Right.
So not following Varnashram means that does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So the point is the Varnashram system is theirs because it works, right? So the point is you have to have, the rule of Varnashram, you marry someone of equal nature, right? So whether you're within or without, you marry someone of equal nature, mm-hmm. like that. That's the most essential thing. It's not by birth, it's by what the actual mentality is.
Mm-hmm.
But on the social platform, birth much of the time is considered.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the person, let's say they were, their family is from another country, they've moved to a different country, but the child is born in that country. Depending upon the social status, he may be considered from that country. It means he'll be legally from that country, but he may be considered part of the social scene of that, or he may be considered not. Depending upon where it is and who he's dealing with. You know what I'm saying? He's German, but he's born in France. So in some circles, he's just French. But in some circles, he's not. He's German. So accordingly, he'll act. So if the circle thinks he's German, he'll act as not French. You know, but if the circle doesn't care about that, then he's French. You understand?
Yeah.
So in other words, it takes, the Varnashram system takes maturity. So for a devotee, even to function, who he's on the edge of this thing, it still takes maturity. Right? Because the other one might be envious, this, that. That's why there's that separation. Here it's just because the other ones don't have the social understanding. That's why he's on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so Sanatana Goswami, right? Means because of his position, they're high-grade Brahmins, but they're associated with the Muslims, so then they're considered outcasts. They're antija. So therefore, for the pandas at Puri, who are, you know, supposed to be, you know, I mean, they're devotees, but they have a lot of the sense of this Varnashram system. So therefore, they're outside that system. So they act like that.
Mm-hmm.
Technically speaking, who should be in the temple should be Haridas Thakur, Sanatana Goswami. They are the ones that should be in the temple, right? And the other ones, then, you know, okay, they should be there because they're devotees, but as far as the social status, that's not what puts, it's not because they're born in the Brahmin family, that's why they should be inside.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's because they're devotees. But if they're not devotees, then why? But still, the social status is followed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So one is careful about that.
Mm-hmm.
One's not proud.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it's good. It works for devotional service, and it works for the Varnashram system. But the point is actual status is devotee. Right? Then in lack of status, you can say, this one's better than that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, someone's unclean, but then there's a matter of how unclean. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, the person who's following Varnashram, but's not a devotee, is unclean. But the one who's not following Varnashram and is not a devotee is more unclean. Does that make sense? But the devotees who are following are devotees, then they're all devotees. So the distinction is not social status, it's who's more advanced.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But in the outside world, they'll follow the Vyavaharika, they'll follow the, you know, the social rules.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, like you have one of those alwars, they're eternal associates of the Lord, like I mentioned. But one, he's born in the Shudra family. So, according to tradition, you don't chant Veda around Shudras, right? Because if they learn it, they may misuse it, or they don't understand, or they may think, what's this? You know, there's some way there might be an offense. Not necessarily, but to avoid, it's easier to make a general rule. So, he was walking by, and some Brahmins were chanting Vedic mantra, right? So then they see him coming, he's a Shudra, so they stop chanting. And then by the time he's walked by, they go to start chanting, but they don't remember where they were.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they were chanting a verse that mentioned about a grass being split with some philosophical point of that. So then they couldn't remember where he was. So then that Alwar, who's a Shudra, he picked up a blade of grass, showed it to the Brahmins, and went like this. And then, oh yeah, and then they started chanting. Like that, you know, because he's from Vaikuntha, you know, so it's like that. But, you know, he played the social role.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those, oh, yeah, no. Hey, wait a minute, how does he know? You know. Okay. Right, and so why is the person who's situated in Varnashram better than the person who's not, even though they're not devotees? It's because he has a position within Varnashram, so his life is regulated. Right, he has an obligation. He has something. So that's higher form of life than an unregulated one. Right? When we say antija, what does it mean? It means unregulated. Outside Varnashram means it's unregulated. We look at it, oh, outside. Oh no, but I want to do this. And I want. Why can't I have a position? Why can't I do that? Why can't I do all these things? But what about the regulation?
Yes.
You know, what about that? You know, the kshatriya, he gets up in the morning. Right? Takes his bath. He's getting up in the Brahma Muhurta. Krishna's getting up at 3 in the morning. Right? Does that make sense? He's sleeping with 16,108 queens, right? You know, so if anybody had an excuse to sleep in, he's got it. You know? Does that make sense? So, but he's not taking that. He's getting up at 3 in the morning. Getting up, taking the bath, doing the sadhana, giving a charity, doing fire yagyas, doing all that thing, and then 6 o'clock in the morning, he's in office in the court. Auntie, just don't do that. You understand? That's the point. That's why you can sit in the court and adjudicate, because he's doing these other things. So the thing is when we look at it, we only look at the facility and the right. We don't look at what's the obligation, the lifestyle that goes with it. And what is that symptomatic of? Antyaja. Right? That's one of the things that Manu gives, is lack of regulation. So varnasha means you're regulated. Then, because you're regulated, then you're able to do those certain offices very nicely. Right? So that's how it's working. Yes.
Maharaj, what about those who are outside of Varnashram and they may not be aware also about Varnashram system, like other religious paths like Christianity and all. But we can see that in their practice a greater detachment from material enjoyment or a greater devotional sentiment towards like surrender to the Supreme Lord or like that. So
greater than what?
Greater detachment from material enjoyment.
But greater than what? Greater means
greater than a devotee who is within Varnashram, but he is still.
Are you sure? Means you're making that like a general thing, because means when you say Christian, you're looking at a priest, right? But within devotees, are you looking at a priest?
No.
So then you should make a proper comparison. You know, the devotee who's in the temple doing puja all day and does all that, and the Christian priest who's doing the same thing. If you're taking a general devotee, you should take a general Christian. Otherwise, it's not fair. You know. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
And even if you do, what's their understanding of God? Well, it means they have that faith, but faith in what? You know what I'm saying? Is God a person? Where are they going to go? You know what I'm saying? So they have nice sentiment, but the point is a lot of people have sentiment. You know what I'm saying? Sentiment's good, but still it's not enough. Does that make sense?
So we cannot compare them to a karmakandi who is attached to his senses and all that.
But so is a general Christian. What does a Christian do all day? You know what I'm saying? When is a Christian actually religious? Okay? If he's, you know, a general good upstanding Christian. Right? He goes to church on Sunday morning for 2 hours, right? And he dresses up really nice before he goes. And they all sit around and talk about this and that. Are they all sitting around at the door talking about Jesus? Or they're talking about business and their new car and wow, nice suit and, you know, stuff like that. You understand? So the point is it's easy to make these comparisons, but the point is that Christian who has that kind of faith you're talking about, generally speaking, is called a saint. Right? So then if you're going to take saints, then why not take saints in the Varnashram system? You know what I'm saying? Like that. Right? Yeah. Yadavadas, respected Babaji, is there an authorized scriptural procedure for receiving beka or vesh? Right? It means the dress. Ananta Das Babaji, it has not been clearly outlined. Human beings from any varna can embrace the Vaishnava Dharma. However, according to scripture, only a brahmana can accept the sannyas order, no other. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 7.11.35, Narad Muni first describes the characteristics of the different varnas and then goes on to say, if one shows the symptoms of being a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, as described above, even if he's appeared in a different caste, he should be accepted according to those systems of classification. On the strength of this scriptural statement, the practice of giving sannyas to persons having Brahminical qualities, although born in lower varnas, was started. If all these conditions are met with, such a practice is certainly be accepted as authorized by the scriptures. Of course, this is only applicable in spiritual paramarthic consideration and is not applicable according to mundane Vyavaharika convention. Right? So his working is that even if he's born in the not in a Brahmin family, if the social system appreciates it, then he could take sannyas. But if it doesn't, he wouldn't. He'd live as a sannyasi too, but he wouldn't accept the dress and all those kind of forms. Right, in some sense. But as a devotee, then he could go out begging and do the whole thing. So, you know, that's also accepted. He's a sadhu. He may not be a sannyasi, but he's a sadhu. So it works. right? But he's saying he's there. But if you go back in time, before when they weren't worried about the birth, right, then he might function in that capacity. Right? So in other words, they're saying if the society is worried about that, then you do that. If it's not worried about it, you don't do about that. Does that make sense? Yes.
Imagine what's happened in, for example, in India and in the West, the society has different value. So
when they had different value, it was easy. When they had the same value, that's when the problem starts. Does that make sense? In other words, when we see up to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, before Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there were two different value systems. So Indian had its and the Western had theirs, and they worked in their own circles. There were some common points of law so that they'd cooperate, but other than that, there were two different societies. Just one was in control for economic reasons, and the other one was just carrying on their life. But with the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur here, then the Vedic system was starting to take on the values of the Western system. So that's why then one is addressing these things, right? Like that. This is more within the system, but it still applies when you cross the system. You know what I'm saying? Like for us, nobody cares. Nobody worries about these things. So therefore, devotees, whatever the position, whatever they qualify, they function within that, within Varanashram, because there's no one to complain. You know what I'm saying? Because the normal thing is you follow Varanashram according to your position. Right? So therefore, if there's no complaint, then socially you follow like that as well as you know, personally. But if socially people don't appreciate, then personally you follow, but socially you don't. Does that make sense? Yeah. So there's advantages and disadvantages. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you could look at it possibly that if India was still all the little kingdoms, which would be more ideal socially on the way of following the Varanashram and things like that, one, the preaching wouldn't be so universal and the Westerners wouldn't have much of a position. You know, you wouldn't be able to just get on the train and go from one side to another. At the time of, freedom. When they freed themselves from India. Independence, yeah. That there were 990 some odd kingdoms. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, representing in parliament.
Yeah, so then you'd have to work. You know, if they all agreed to work as one thing, then you move around. But otherwise, each one would have its own different rules and laws. And, like that. So point is, if it's socially a disturbance, then you're careful about it. If it's not, then you don't worry about it. You know. Same time, if you're establishing something and people aren't that fixed, there's only one or two, and they're not the ones really making the situation, then you deal with you preach, you deal with the spiritual position. So if they can accept that, nice. And if not, then, you know what I'm saying? Because for us, it doesn't matter, because the social doesn't matter to us. It matters to the materialist. So you deal with it in such a way that it'll function. But as we see, we still deal according to God's laws. It's not that we accept, if we're dealing with the Antijas society, that we accept the Antijas laws. That's the whole point. The consideration is you accept the higher rules of the Varanashram, not that you accept the lower rules of the Antijas, right? So devotees, when they preach, oh, the Antijas don't like this or that, of course, that's why they're Antijas. Of course they don't like, you know, so therefore that means you don't take. Does that make sense? You know, it's like I'm trying to preach to the, you know, more on the street level, and they don't like all the rules and following the traffic rules and not stealing and all that. So I won't follow any of those rules also, because that way then I'll be able to move with them. No. You understand? You know, the difference is Antija means they don't accept the higher law of God. That's all. That's the principle. At this point, okay, so now we're saying is that for following this is that you have someone who's in the lower position, that if they actually have the position, they could take it. But it's only by the spiritual qualification someone will have it, basically, in this time. Because otherwise, there's not the qualities that someone might move through, or it may be so outstanding because the association. So it's by the transcendental position, then you don't have to worry what's the background. You worry what's the nature. You know what I'm saying? When we say we don't care, it means we don't care about the background. What we care about is, what is the guna and karma? What are they doing now? Not what was the person, what is the person now? Does that make sense? It's not that both are thrown out, just one. At this point, Yadavadas turned to his companion. Dear Chandidas, has your question been answered? Chandidas replied, I was able to assimilate the following from the wonderful spiritual teachings by the most respectable Anantadas Babaji. Jiva, having forgotten that he is an eternal servant of Sri Krishna, accepts the material body, and under the influence of the gunas, three material modes, he begins to try to exploit this world. In return for this, he is awarded with pain and enjoyment. In his attempt to enjoy the results of his actions, he is forced to accept birth, disease, old age, and finally death. He goes through many lives, sometimes with a high birth, sometimes with a low birth, but each time his soul is covered by a new false ego. He is driven to protect his fragile mortal body from the ravages of hunger and thirst. He has to suffer in many ways because of an imbalanced distribution and unavailability of essential commodities. His body is under constant siege from the various and inevitable distresses. Insufferable quarrels and disputes with wife and children sometimes drive him to commit suicide. Now remember, this is over 150 years ago, this is written, and it's being discussed on the eternal platform. This is always there. It's just a matter of whether it's the main predominance or it's not the main predominance, but it's still there. That's all. That's the only difference in the ages, what's the predominance. But what's being discussed here, that's the material world. We'll say, oh, it's Kali Yuga, therefore all the Vedic doesn't apply. No. These things were always there. Right? You have the stories, you know, that are all these Gandharva Pajalpa that's there, spoken by Lord Shiva to his wife, right? And then repeated by his gunas. And that. And so these stories, you know, aren't just now. They're in all these different times throughout the history of the universe. Right? But if you hear them, the same stuff's going on today. You know, in other words, when you get down to mundane Pajalpa, it's always been like that. Now, what's special is the outstanding position of the great Brahmins and great kings. But the common person, it's always been the same old stuff. Always. You know? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like here, Shastra thing in Niti, right? So this has been documented. It means itself put into a book a few thousand years ago, right? But it's talking on, you know, the principles of the Shastra. So they're talking on eternal principles. Now it's talking about, in Niti, about being clever in the moment. It doesn't matter what's going on, what your plan is. You have to work by what's happening right now, right? Right now is you have to make a decision and you have to act right now. You can't think, well, maybe, or I'll think about it, or... You know, not be aware. Otherwise, you'll lose. You'll fail. Right? The example is given of this wife. Right? So this wife, her husband was a judge. Right? And then, no, excuse me, not she wasn't a judge. She was something else. No, he was just a regular guy. Excuse me. He was a regular guy. Somehow or another, because his husband was always out and traveling and going out for days to the next village and doing work and then coming back. I think he might have been a carpenter. So he'd go out, you know, make something and then come back, go out again, come back. So he's out quite regularly. So somehow or another, the wife had made a friendship, you know, close friendship with the local judge, right? And then somehow or another, by being around the house, she had also made a friendship with the son. Right? Does that make sense? So she's having an affair both with the father and the son. You know, and both are different from her husband, right? So then the husband you know, is going along everything, but I'm not sure if it was someone else mentioned it or he kind of figured that maybe something's not quite right here. So one time he was going out. He said he had to go out, and he's saying he's going out, and he went to everything to leave. The wife saw him off and everything like that. And then he decided to come back and see what was going to happen. Right? So now, just after he left, then the son showed up. Right? And so then she's with him and all that, but then, you know, just a very short time later, then the father shows up, the judge. So she takes him and puts him into the son and puts him in the closet. And then the judge is there, and then at that time, that's when she could see the husband coming. Right? So she's already using intelligence, okay, hid the son in the closet. Now she's got the judge. What'd she do? Stick him in another closet? How many closets you got, right? And then the husband's coming. So then she gives a stick to, I mean, he has a stick, you know, walking stick. She says, take your stick and all that and walk out of here like you're really mad, you know, just fuming like this. You know, and so when my husband goes by, you know, you just, you know, don't really respond. You're just angry, right? So he doesn't know why. He just does it, right? And so he just takes a stick, walks out, you know, marching down the road, and the guy's coming by, and wow, the judge is going by, and he looks really angry and all that, you know. And so then he comes into the house, and you know, what's going on and all that, you know. Because, I mean, how do you explain that you got two men in your house, right? And he says, yeah. So I said, oh, my God. You know, so this morning, you know, the judge and his son, they had a falling out, and they were so angry. Father was, you know, chasing them and, you know, beating with the sticks, and the son ran away. He came here, and I hid him in the closet, and the husband came here looking for him. Didn't find him, went marching off to look for him somewhere else and all that. She went and got him out of the closet. Okay, your father's gone. You can go now, and all this and that, and, you know, like that. And then, you know, as soon as they went, then she greeted the husband and did everything very nicely. You understand? That's using the brain. So that's niti. You understand? But, okay, so we get the point from the story. But look at this story. This is having an affair with two guys. Right? This is a Shastric story. But this is ordinary people. Right? This wasn't a big Brahmin, a big king. Those are different stories. This is ordinary people. So ordinary people have always been like that. It's just a matter of whether there's more prominent. Here it's like you have a story here and there. In a town there's a couple of stories. Nowadays it's a couple that are not stories. You understand? That's the difference. But these princes, we make it as like Kali Yuga, it's a new thing and it's never happened before, and what can we do? We just can't follow anything. No. It's always been like this. Right, so when it says these things, it doesn't just mean now, it means always.
Maharaj?
Yes.
In the higher ages, Satyayuga, the majority of people are at Paramahansa level. It's still things like this going on?
Maybe, but even if not, the point is that Satyayuga means that they're all Paramahamsas. You know, Treta Yuga, you drop down in the Varnashram. You know what I'm saying? So, but it means there are always going to be tribals and stuff. You know, in other words, there's people who have a tribal mentality, but, you know, deserve a very nice environment. You know, just like there's dogs on the heavenly planets. You know, Gajendra was an elephant on the heavenly planets. So, you know, it's nice. It's a good arrangement. But he's still an elephant. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like there's a dog, he lives in a nice neighborhood, and then there's a dog who doesn't live in a nice neighborhood. You know, so it's still, it's just there's the karma of their environment. You know? No. He is forced by greed for money to commit many sinful activities, ending up by being punished by the law, becoming a pariah of society, and thus bringing upon himself untold misery. There's no relief from anxiety and lamentation brought about by death in the family, loss of wealth, attacks by rogues, etc. Even in old age, sorrows accompany him when his family members neglect his needs. Rheumatic and phlegmic conditions trouble him as the body begins to age and gradually disintegrate. After death, the sojourn in the next mother's womb is at every moment a harrowing and excruciating experience. Combined with all this suffering, lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy smother the conscience and sense of discrimination into obscurity. This is samsara, material existence. Right? Now I have properly grasped the purport of the word samsara. I repeatedly fall at the feet of all the assembled Babajis. The Vaishnavas are the real gurus of this world. And today, by their mercy, I've gained the actual understanding of samsara. The entire assembly of Vaishnavas burst out loudly, uttering Hari Nam and praising Ananta Das Babaji for his perceptive spiritual analysis. More Vaishnavas joined their group, and Lahiri Maharshai began to sing a composition of his own. So this is his song. There's no end to the jiva's suffering after falling into the dark well of samsara. However, if he associates with saintly souls and turns in surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Hari, he puts a stop to his distress. This material life means being consumed by a fire, where all material endeavors are fuel for the fire. Now, it means whatever you do in material life, it's going to make the fire worse. It's everything. You're nice, it makes it worse. You're not nice, it makes it worse. Right? It doesn't matter. It just gets worse. You know, you're nice, you get entangled because it's nice. It's not nice, you get upset and become more bodily conscious. Either way, you become bodily conscious. When the incinerated jiva takes up chanting the transcendental name of Krishna without offense, incinerated jiva, this merciful rain puts out the flames. I, Kalidas, consider those who have taken shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Nityananda Chaitanya as my only safe sanctuary in this life. Chandidas was extremely moved by the words of the song and began to dance along. At the end, he fell like a stick at the feet of the Babajis. He sanctified himself by applying the dust from their feet upon his head, beginning to roll on the ground and crying in ineffable joy. The assembled Vaishnavas who witnessed Chandidas' ecstatic emotion agreed that he was very fortunate. After a while, Yadava Das said softly to Chandidas, "Come, let us return. We must cross over the Ganga." Together, they offered their dandavats in Prajumna Kunj and came out of the entranceway where they saw Damayanti offering repeated obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. She said, "Alas, why was I born as a woman? If I were a man, I could unhesitatingly go inside the Kunj. Behold the lotus feet of the Vaishnava sadhus, and offer my dandavats, thus fulfilling the purpose of this human life. My wish is that birth after birth I may serve the Vaishnavas in Navadvip." The three of them returned to Kuliagram after crossing the Ganga. A wonderful transformation took place in Chandidas and his wife Damayanti Devi from that day on. They began to exhibit the Vaishnava mood and qualities, and it appeared that material life could no longer touch them. All their time was taken up in serving the Vaishnavas, chanting Hari Nam, and doing acts of mercy to all living beings. How wonderful was this newly changed Vaishnava couple. What immense potency there is in the mercy of a Vaishnava. All glories to Krishna Nam. All glories to the sacred land of Sri Navadvip Dham. So summary of chapter 8, Nitya Dharma and Vaishnava behavior. Right? So now we're taking is, you have the philosophy there, but also now you have the etiquette or the culture, right? Because we've discussed Nitya Naimittik, then Naimittik with Nitya, right? Means the Vaishnava thing with the Naimittik, how does that work? How do they combine? Right? Because before it was just distinguishing what's transcendental, what is temporary. Right, and then within temporary, what do we call, you know, daily, and what do we call occasional? All right. So then now we've come to now Nitya Dharma, and then what is behavior? What is etiquette? Right. So it's the culture. One day, responding to an invitation, the Vaishnavas of Godruma arrived to visit the Vaishnavas living in the woods skirting the southeastern embankment of the sacred Sri Gaurarada Lake. They were all sitting together in a secluded kunj, having just taken noon prasadam. An inquisitive young Vaishnava amongst the visitors spoke up respectfully. "I would like to have permission to ask this Vaishnava assembly a question. Kindly pacify my inquiring mind." The learned Sri Haridas Babaji, a resident of this sacred kunja, secluded kunja, who was at the advanced age of nearly 100 years, and among the few persons still remaining who had actually seen Sri Nityananda, spoke up. "Sir, we have Sri Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji here heading up this assembly, so you should not have any concern regarding an answer to your question." The young Vaishnava from Badagachi then inquired with humility, "Vaishnava Dharma is Nitya Dharma. I would like to learn in detail about the ideal conduct of a Vaishnava, especially towards other people." Right? So then you get the idea is that, one, in other Vaishnavas, but also to those who are not Vaishnavas.
Just a quick point. He saw Nityananda, so this is during, what, the 16th century?
I'm not sure. No, it could be later, because Nityananda state, yeah, but it could be also in the, I think, in the 17th century.
Yeah.
Okay. Because here, Prajumna Das Brahmachari is still around,
mm-hmm.
who's an associate of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Hmm? Yeah, okay. Because this, what's his name? Paramahamsa, Sri Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji, his guru is Prajumna Brahmachari.
Mm-hmm.
He known as Nisringa Brahmachari. He's the one who, you know, he worships the Lord in
yeah, through the mind.
Yeah, but you know what is this place?
Oh.
Nisringapalli.
Nisringapalli.
Yeah, and so he's the one that made the road for Lord Chaitanya to go to Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that. Sri Haridas Babaji glanced and motioned in Vaishnav Das Babaji's direction. "My dear Vaishnav Das, a good Vaishnav and scholar such as you is rarely found in Bengal, especially nowadays. Hence it is appropriate that you should reply to this question." Vaishnav Das Babaji replied humbly, "Revered Babaji, you have seen Sri Nityananda, Sri Balaram's direct expansion face to face. You have also associated with many spiritual stalwarts and instructed many devotees in the devotional sciences. Therefore, please shower your mercy upon us today and educate us." The Vaishnavas unanimously and enthusiastically requested Sri Haridas Babaji to speak, and finding no way out, he agreed, right? In other words, he had his way out, you know. Senior man, kind of directing things. Okay, you know, you did like that, but then being this way, he didn't have a way to get out of it. So then, okay. After first offering dandavats to Sri Nityananda, he began his dissertation. "First, I offer my respects to all jivas, knowing them to be the servitors of Sri Krishna. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 685, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj has written, Some accept him, whereas others do not, yet everyone is a servant. One who does not accept him, however, will be ruined by sinful activities." Those who have embraced the path of bhakti are divided into three groups: Kanista, neophyte, Madhyama, intermediate, and Uttama, topmost. The first of these types is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.247 in the following verse. "Devotee who faithfully engages in the worship of the deity in the temple, but does not behave properly towards other devotees or people in general, is called a prakrita bhakta, or materialistic devotee, and is considered to be in the lowest position. One who worships the deity of the Lord with faith, but never respects the created living creatures of the Lord, nor worships and serves his devotees with devotion, is prakrita bhakta. Already it has been established that Shraddha is the seed of devotion. To worship the deity of the Lord with Shraddha is certainly bhakti, but without worshiping and serving the devotee of the Lord, one cannot execute Shuddha bhakti." Right? So it's devotional service one's performing. So one is seeing the Lord, one is respecting the Lord, and here when it's saying the devotees, it means the general. Right? That. So if he's worshiping the deity, it means he's initiated and he has a spiritual master. And as we'll see, there will be that appreciation for the spiritual master. right? But general devotees may not be properly dealt with. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the point. That's the neophyte, right? Because he doesn't see all living entities as part and parcel of Krishna. So he makes the distinction. So that's the factor, right? Because he's engaged in devotion. He may have good faith, good mood, good this and that, but he doesn't. Now, if he has that, if he deals properly, that will put him in a higher position, right? By this definition, right? If you're defining by knowledge of Shastra, he might be a neophyte by lack of knowledge of Shastra, but may be very advanced in this aspect, right?
This neophyte devotee is having the knowledge because he has learned through the all people, jivas are part and parcel of
the yes.
But sometimes he behaves with him nicely, sometimes because of his mood and situation he behaves wrongly.
Yes.
That makes different.
Yeah, that means he's still a neophyte. But, you know, he's doing better. You have to see what's problem. He basically always deals nicely, then that would put him at the lower end of Madhyama. But if he, you know, the not dealing so well, then that puts him as neophyte. Maybe the upper end, but still as neophyte. Without worshipping the deity of the Lord, one's devotion cannot even begin. However, the worship of the deity should be performed with ever-increasing shuddha chinmoy buddhi, transcendental consciousness. In other words, you're worshipping the deity, but you should be increasing the consciousness. So it naturally is developing and getting more and more advanced. Right? Because we see the advanced devotees are also worshipping the deity. But it's due to their affection for the deity, not because the necessity of following the rules. Right? If deity worship is conducted with sambandha jnana, then the consequent transcendental understanding will naturally stimulate both bhakti seva, spiritual service to the Lord's devotees, and the transcendental esoteric perception and service of the deity. Right? If the proper knowledge is there, you'll increase the quality of your worship, you know, the attitude, and the worship of the devotees. Right? They'll both develop. Right? Krishna mentions in the Bhagavatam, when he's describing the process of deity worship to his mother, right? So after finishing, then he tells Devahuti that if someone worships a deity nicely but doesn't respect all living entities, it's not actually very pleasing to the Lord, right? So in other words, he's still a neophyte. So the neophyte, that's where they start, but you're supposed to get at least minimum to the Madhyama platform. Madhyama platform is a solid platform. That's the platform that you want to function from.
When it is said, just a few, without worshipping the deity of the Lord, one devotion cannot even begin. This means that without, even without worshipping physically,
no, it just means involved in it. It's just like we have the temple program and different exactly. programs, that's all deity worship. What we're following is our lifestyle is the first means. There's five deity worship means it's got the Panchanga Puja. So the first one is Abhigamana. That's getting up in the morning, taking the bath, dressing, putting tilak, going to the temple, going to Mangalarti. That's chanting Gayatri. That's all Abhigamana. So everybody's doing that. Does that make sense? So that's all these parts are going on. So, and they're doing study, respecting devotees, taking care of guests, worshipping Tulsi, taking prasad, studying the scriptures, chanting the japa, cleaning the temple, all these things. So these two, everybody's doing. Right? Now, it's a question of maybe you're collecting paraphernalia or maybe you're on the altar doing puja. But the other to our main. And the swadhyaya, if that's not performed along with the deity worship, it's not considered complete.
Swadhyaya
means study. That means the dealing with the Vaishnavas, Tulsi, guests, you know, cleaning, all these different things. If you're not doing that, then it's not considered actual. The Lord's not very pleased. Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, you're doing deity worship, but if you don't have the etiquette, then the Lord's not very happy. Because they're all his parts and parcels. You're worshiping him, but not anything else. You know.
How does he make advancement if the Lord is not pleased with him?
Yeah, that's the question. You know what I'm saying? So if the Lord's not pleased, he doesn't advance. So how do you please the Lord? What's the actual way to please the Lord?
Still devotee.
Yes, it's through the devotees. So therefore, by properly dealing with the devotees, the Lord will be pleased to advance. Right? So the point is he has faith, he has a regulated lifestyle, he has focus. That's good. But he's going to advance as quickly as he appreciates and associates with devotees. Not by how nicely his deity worship is. Right? You know, but he increases, makes it nice, and that's good. At least he's spending money and time doing that. That he'll get purified. Right? But it's only when he pleases the Vaishnavas that the Lord's actually going to be happy. You know what I'm saying? But you need the deity worship because that regulates your lifestyle. Therefore, you're doing the things. Right? But it's actually by association with the devotees that you advance. Right? Does that make sense? Then if you're doing the devotees nicely, then that deity worship, that will also be very dynamic. Right? Does that make sense? So it's always you have the primary and secondary. Like that. So they're both important. But you always have to know which is in which position. When there is a perfect marriage of Shraddha with transcendental understanding, then this is called Shastriya Shraddha, faith based on proper scriptural conclusions. In contrast, deity worship bereft of a clear and correct concept of Sambandha Gyan is conducted on the level of mechanical, ritualistic, Laukika Shraddha. Hence, we deduce that although this is the initial stage of bhakti, it is certainly not Shuddha bhakti. Right? Yeah, because Shuddha bhakti, you have to be able to discriminate what's what. If you can't discriminate, how will it be pure devotion? Right? Kanishtha Vaishnavas or Prakriti Bhaktis are those who have received initiation from hereditary gurus, known as Kula gurus, out of family tradition. Or those who feel sentimentally inspired upon seeing others worshipping the deity of Sri Vishnu, and so then worship the deity in imitation. Or those who have accepted initiation into the Vishnu mantra with Laukika Shraddha. They are not in the category of Shuddha Bhakta, Bhakti. These unrefined devotees are on the level of Chaya Bhakta Abhash, a shadow-like semblance of devotion. However, they are above those on the platform of Pratibimba Bhakti Abhas, a reflected, distorted semblance of bhakti, because Pratibimba Bhakti Abhas, being offensive in nature, is devoid of actual Vaishnavism. Right? Means you have those who are performing bhakti, but it's not actually for bhakti. Right? The smartas are worshipping the deity. Right? The Mayavadis are worshipping the deity. But their idea is from that they'll get either fruitive results or liberation. So that'll be the Pratibimba. You know, it's a reflected, distorted semblance. Right? And the other is that then it's a, you know, it's because of the kind of more ordinary. Then it's like a shadow. Right? But it's actually connected. The shadow is more direct and it's connected. The other one is a reflected and it's distorted. So it's not actually, it kind of looks like it from the outside, but it's not actually real. Kanishtha Vaishnavas. Oh, okay. A person elevated to Chaya Bhakti Abhash is immediately fortunate because of his from this preliminary stage, he may eventually promote it to the Madhyama Vaishnava and Uttama Vaishnava platforms, right? Mm-hmm. So the Chaya Bhakti Abhash is an elevation, so it's very fortunate. So the Kanishtha is on a very fortunate platform. Right, so we've already dealt with the ones, the Chaya Bhakti Abhash, right? The Pratibimba Bhakti Abhash, right? So now we're taking is that the neophyte, even though for all whatever faults are there, is still in a very, very fortunate position, right? So footnote 12. In Harinam Chintamani is stated, the scriptures are filled with words like Namabhas, Vaishnavabhas, Shraddhabhas, Ratiabhas, Premabhas, Muktiabhas, etc. The prefix Abhasa has special meaning and is a versatile application. Let us discuss this now. Factually, abhasha, faint or indistinct presence, is of two sorts, Sarupa Abhasha and Pratibimba Abhasha. Sarupa Abhasha is the partial infiltration of the full brilliance. For example, on a cloudy day, the light of the sun is present, but the full brilliance of the sun is shaded by the clouds. Now, in its first stage of appearance, Namabhasa is shadowy. Still, it is of immense benefit to humanity. It is known as Chaya Namabhasa, or the faint shadowy name. The way to the shadowy name is opened by Chaya Shraddha Bhasha, or the faint shadow of Shraddha. Right? Means so when the faith is like shadow, therefore it's shadow Namabhasa. Right? But the point is this is all connected to the Lord, so it's directly giving benefit. Right? Does that make sense? The problem with these things is because they give these levels to show it. The tendency, if you're looking at it simply from Sambandha Gyan, then it's okay, this is here, and then this is the strength and weaknesses. Because if prema is the standard, then of course it's in a lower position. But devotional service is the overall standard, and the lack of it, that's below the standard. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's in the elevated position. It's the better, that person is the proper, situated in the proper human platform. The difficulty comes is then when we bring our mundane concept of social status into this and try to apply it on here. Oh, how can you say that about the neophyte? He's also this, he's also that. Well, what's the point? We're just talking facts, the position. You know, we're not talking about his mood or anything like that. We're talking the position. Right? And so the point is it's not as ideal as being on the Madhyam, which is not as ideal as being on the Uttam, which is not as ideal as being on the platform of prema within Uttam. Right? Because if we don't understand where we are and what is the idea of what we're trying to get to, how will one traverse that difference? If no, everybody's all right and don't bother, and not, then where you are is fine. Right? And the focus is not on developing, it's on being careful that everybody's the same. You know, you discuss the philosophy. No, but you can't say that about them and this. No, but we're discussing the philosophy. You know, how you define that, apply that into the individual's life, that's another thing. Right? But the point is they're like this. So that's the point. So he's saying it's a immense benefit. Right? And as I mentioned before, is that, you know, they're having the immensely fortunate. On the other hand, Pratibimba Abhasa reflects a distorted image of the real object, just as sunlight is misrepresented when reflected off the surface of water. This distorted reflection allows only inaccurate perception of the original source of light. Pratibimba Namabhasa appears when the rays of the holy name reflect off the lake of Mayavadi thought, bequeathing Sayujamukhi upon the Mayavadis who chant him. Even though it's Pratibimba, they still get liberation. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is they can work so hard doing all these other processes, but they can just take up the chanting of the holy name and they'll get liberated. But the point is what's the use of liberation? You know? However, this will fail to generate the quintessence of chanting Krishna Prema. Indeed, this Namabhasa is a major Namaparad. Therefore, it cannot really be counted as Namabhasa at all. Right? Chaya Namabhasa, or Sarup Namabhasa, is the real Namabhasa, and is subdivided into four categories, as described above. The scriptures, while praising Namabhasa profusely condemn Pratibhima Namabhasa. Right, so one has to be able to divide that. That's why you see it'll be praising it because you're praising the proper aspect that's proper, but the point that's not proper is not followed. Even though technically they use the same name, this Namabhasa. Mm-hmm. So that's the difficulty. Sometimes devotees don't distinguish between Pratibimba Namabhasa and Chaya Namabhasa, right? And so, because of this, then they'll say, oh, Namabhasa is, you know, it's offensive, so it's not useful. No, it is useful. Point is Pratibimba Namabhasa, that's not important to devotees. But the Chaya Namabhasa, that's where you start chanting. Right? Yeah.
But Chaya Namabhasa means avoiding the 10 offenses. But he is not concentrated and on hearing the holy name, but he is avoiding the offenses and still is.
He may be, he may not be. But the point is he has faith in, you know, in Krishna and the deity, the Vaishnavas, the holy name. So he's chanting, but he may not be very developed. So he doesn't always deal proper with the devotees. He has maintains material desires. In other words, it's not Shuddha Bhakta, Bhakti. So therefore, it's Chaya Namabhas. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? See, is that when we regulate these bad things, we don't regulate the bad things within devotional service. There's lower levels of it. But it's not that, if you're avoiding the 10 offenses but inattentive, then you qualify for that. Other than that, then you're complete write-off. No. Anybody who's chanting, you know, with that faith, they're fortunate. Right? It's the one who's chanting without faith or not chanting, they're the ones who have the problem. You know what I'm saying? We always tend to, whoever's on the bottom of devotional service, put that down and move it. But it's social what we're doing. The actual fact is, it's connected to Krishna, it's perfect. It's not connected to Krishna, it's useless. That's all. And if you think there's value in anything that's not connected to Krishna, then that's a materialistic point of view. You can say, no, but we can use the car for Krishna. That's the point. If the car is used for Krishna, yes. But if the car is not for Krishna, it's useless. So all situations, all branches of knowledge, all endeavors are all useless if they're not in some way connected to Krishna. So that's only what makes them of value, because they're connected. They're not connected, they're useless. But we have this thing that, no, there's certain social things and knowledge and endeavors and all this that actually have value on their own. And then we're engaging in Krishna's service. Isn't that so wonderful? But the point is they're not wonderful if they're not engaged in Krishna's service. You know what I'm saying? Is that what I'm saying? Right? So we always have to watch when the word has two divisions. And so when it's praised, it means the part that's valuable, and when it's criticized, it means the part that's not. Not that, like when Varnashram is criticized, that means Varnashram not connected to the Lord. Varnashrams are connected to the Lord, that's praised. Varnashram connected, then within the praise of connecting it to the Lord, Varnashram where primary is devotion, and the Varnashram is secondary as a support, that is praised. And where you make the Varnashram prominent and the devotion secondary, that's mixed devotional service, that's not praised so much. That's the lesser. But because that position is there, then on either case we throw it out. Because the word Varnashram was used in the negative context, but it was also used in the positive.
This is an immaturity thing.
Yeah. It's immaturity. It's a lack of sambandhagyan. We don't apply, we don't distinguish, we don't make that point, because that's the whole thing. That was what was being mentioned yesterday, is that living entity means that the devotee could tell the difference between the jiva and the paramatma. Like that. And so, therefore, but otherwise they're not telling the difference. Right? It means I have money, I'm using it for Krishna, therefore money is perfect. Right? But then that means the money is me, and it's devotional service. Where's the difference between you and paramatma? No, paramatma defines if money is good or not, not us. He defines that if it's used in his service, it's of value, and if it's not used, it's of no value, even though you have so much of it. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is we're not making this distinction, and then because of that, we're getting socially upset. Oh, how you can speak like that. Chayanamabhas, yeah. The scriptures, while praising Namabhas, profusely condemn Pratibimba Namabhas. So when we say Namabhas, we mean Chaya. You know, but if we're criticizing, then that means we're Pratibimba. Yeah. Chayanamabhas is had as a result of chanting the holy name with anartas born of ignorance. Right? So anartas is still there. That's why it's Chaya, otherwise it'd be Shutanam. But the chanting of the holy name with anartars, nurtured by wicked and perverted knowledge, produces Pratibimba Namabhas. It is considered a terrible obstacle to devotional service and a heinous offense, right? But we'll say, but he's getting liberation. And but why would we use that as an argument? Because we think liberation is of value. Liberation, what's the value of liberation? If it's not connected to Krishna, it's useless. If it's connected to Krishna, it's useful. So Pratibimba will give liberation not connected to Krishna, absolutely useless. So that's why it's an obstacle to devotional service. Right? That's why it's an offense. Because you're chanting God's name but not recognizing God. A Vaishnava Bhas chanter may not be recognized as a pure Vaishnava, but still should be respected as a neophyte devotee as long as he is not contaminated by the Mayavad philosophy. That's where you tell the difference. And this contaminated by Mayavad philosophy means he wants to merge into Brahman. Not that he's saying something that actually is Mayavad philosophy, but he doesn't know it's Mayavad philosophy. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because devotees will do that a lot, just because they don't study or analyze the scriptures. So much of the time they're talking Mayavad philosophy. Right? But their goal of that is not to merge in Brahman. It's actually to develop love for Krishna. They just don't know they're speaking the wrong thing. Right? Does that make sense? Because there's so much habit of karma and jnana, they just fall back into their natural, you know, positions. Like that. No, he's respected as a neophyte devotee. He's not contaminated by Mayavad philosophy. What I'm saying here, contaminated, means he's actually wants to merge in the Brahman. That's what we're saying. But as much as he doesn't understand the philosophy and he is saying Mayavad philosophy, that will be an obstacle in his understanding and therefore devotional service. But it doesn't mean it now drops him into Pratibimba Namabhas. Yes.
Would an example of that be, sometimes you hear people say that, oh, because the spiritual world is unlimited, there's infinite variety, and Krishna eats something different every day, then he must be eating every genre of cuisine in the world. He must be wearing clothes of every single ethnicity in the world. They must have all styles of dress, therefore, you know, there's no standard. We can wear anything as a result.
That one could say that. I mean, someone says like that. Yeah, that would be kind of a Mayavad thing. They can't distinguish. But I would say that would be coming more from karma. It's more karma content. It's just very intellectually presented. Because the one thing is let's say, take Yves Saint Laurent. Okay? Now, he only does outfits within the Western concept of dress, and he's been doing it his whole life. You know, Versace, they only work within that. So all these houses of these, they're only working within that. You know what I'm saying? And they never, their whole life, go outside of that. So why would you come to the conclusion that they have to be eating all varieties? Just because you don't know anything more than, okay, I do it on white bread, I make a sandwich, or I do it on rye bread. You know, I put mustard, I don't. Okay, now I'm out of options. Okay, now let's go to Mexican. You know what I'm saying? I put Tabasco sauce, I don't. Okay, now that's over. Now let's go to Chinese. I put soy sauce or not, and it's noodles or it's rice. Okay, that's over. You know what I'm saying? You know, so in other words, it's they don't understand the principles. Like Western music has been Western music since the time of the Greeks, and still they're coming out with newer and newer tunes all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and Indian has been that and going on. So the point is they're not actually thinking about what they're saying. It just sounds good. Because in other words, the point is I can wear Western dress. The point's not that they're going to walk up one day in Chinese dress. You know, one day they'll be dressed as a Wiccan or something. No, they're not. They're just going to be dressed in their particular Western, and it's the same stuff. And it's not even any variety in there. It's just they don't know. All it is trying to, it's karma. It's not even jnana there, you know. Mayavad would be, you know, because we're not supposed to, because I don't want, let's say, family life. So therefore, if, you know, I don't want to, you know, and dealing with families and, you know, people of the families, you know, grihasthas is, you know, part of that. So I therefore won't deal with, you know, women and grihasthas and kids. That's Mayavad.
More the gyan side.
Yeah, it's the gyan side. Mm-hmm. The other side is straight up front karma. Mm-hmm. Just intellectually presented, but so is karma mimamsa. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very, very intellectual, but it's still, it's just karma. because it has its goals are the temporary material facility, not liberation.
Right.
You understand? The one is freedom from entanglement, but not engagement in devotion. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The other one is, you know, the freedom to be engaged materially as you please. So even in karma, it's not pious because there's no regulation. The whole point of it is to break down regulations, so therefore it's impious. It's actually a sinful position and a sinful argument. You know, just because you don't have an imagination, you know what I'm saying, and now God doesn't? A Vaishnava, a Bas chanter may not be recognized as a pure Vaishnava, but still should be respected as a neophyte devotee as long as he is not contaminated by the Mayavad philosophy. He can easily become elevated by contact with saintly persons. The elevated Vaishnavas consider such neophytes to be innocent and so shower mercy on them. This must not be ignored and avoided like the agnostic Mayavadis. The pure devotees will resuscitate the small spark of devotion in them, encourage their propensity to worship the deity, and gradually give them some bandhigyan to establish them in devotional service of the Supreme Lord and his devotees. But if they exhibit strong inclinations to incorrigible Mayavad views, then they must be avoided. Right? So that's why gradually establish the sambandhigyan, because then all the different aspects are being gradually. That's what Prabhupada gave, a system of study, so they want to move through and gradually develop everything. Right? But if they won't give up Mayavad, then you avoid them. But if they're willing to give up Mayavad, means that means if they're absorbed in materialism, then that's not a point to avoid. Right? But if it's Mayavadi, then you basically avoid.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So therefore, who's speaking such philosophies doesn't need to be strictly avoided. Right? There's still one can, you know, try to deal properly. Okay. Okay. Now back to the top of 33. There is a distinct difference between the deity worship of the Mayavadi and the deity worship of the very neophyte Kanista Adhikari. Right? So here's that very neophyte, because it's obvious there's a difference in more advanced. You know, but saying very neophyte, you're putting right at the bottom, and the Mayavadi may be very elevated and established in his position. Great knowledge, great, you know, how you say, self-control, you know, all the different things, his vrittas, but still, there's still a difference, right? The neophyte's still in a better position. Once a person begins to worship the deity of the Supreme Lord with a trace of actual bhakti, it is to be understood that he has sown the seed of his own good fortune and that he is free from corrupt ideologies. Therefore, it is understood that he possesses a touch of Shraddha. Right? So, corrupt ideologies. So, in other words, these other things aren't actual ideologies. They're just excuses to remain attached to one's material position. You understand? It's not actually a philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Though it will be presented in that field, because if it's only clever ways to maintain one's material position, that's a lower position because that's attachment. So you have to present it as if it's renunciation and knowledge for the social status. You understand? So it's presented as philosophy, but it's not actually philosophy. It's just clever excuses how to remain in one's material position. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Therefore, it is understood that he possesses a touch of Shraddha. Whereas a person who worships the deity while indoctrinated with the Mayavad philosophy and therefore has not the slightest Shraddha for the actual deity form of the Lord is thus an offender, right? So in other words, we're taking, it means even if it's not so much, it's so much problem, means against the Vedic, all the different things, has problem with so many aspects of the philosophy. But if they have that faith that Krishna is the deity, and the developing love for Krishna is the ultimate goal, right? This chanting the holy name is your process. Then that puts them within the devotional process. Mm-hmm. And all these other things are simply anartas. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? They're not non-devotees. But if they actually have the idea that the impersonal, that's the supreme position. Liberation is the supreme position. That's not a devotee. Even though they may be worshipping and doing all the things, and they've been doing this for generations in their home, and their deity was established, you know, hundreds of years before, they're still, that's pratibimba namabhas, they're not actually devotees. Right? But if somehow or another they get good association and would take up devotional service, they're very nicely situated. Because you know they'll continue the worship, they'll do everything nicely, they have the character, they have the form of the culture, they have knowledge, it's just they hadn't connected it. Yes?
What if, out of sentiment on their altar, while they have Radha and Krishna Gornitai, but they also have Sai Baba or Ganesh there, just because of their family connection?
That's there. But then, I mean, it's, if they have faith in the deity, then that's just an artist, but they may be mixed with these things, but you just have to see which is the prominence. Mm-hmm. Anything like that. But when they say they're all one, then you know it's Maya body. So. But they're not committed to the philosophy and that, so they don't know. So they actually don't know that they're on the platform Pratibimba, right? That they're doing. See, the Mayavadis who are committed to it know that they're using bhakti as a process of elevation, but ultimately it doesn't matter. They just know it's one of the methods you can use. But the other one sincerely thinks that they're worshiping and this is the way, and you talk about love of God, yes, and you know, but then they, you know, how do you, you know, have love of God, but it's impersonal? They don't think. Mm-hmm. You know, you have love for God, and yes, surrender to God, and God's a person, He loves you, He's the Father, and this and that, and so many things. But at the end of the day, go to heaven, and God's in heaven, and all that. And then, what does He look like? Oh, He doesn't have a form, right? So, you know, ultimately, it's impersonal. But they themselves don't even know that. They don't think about it. They don't recognize it.
Maharaj, just a general question. If some new devotee, visited some person who is like worshiping as a Pratima Nama Bhakti Deity, so how will deal with him? Whether he will take the prasadam of deity or not?
Generally, one would avoid. Like that. You know, have him pack it, take it for later, you're on a brata, you don't eat until this time. And then give it to some, you know, the kids come up to you on the road, you know, and they give it to them.
I don't eat till you can't see me anymore.
Only eat in private. Whereas a person who worships a deity while indoctrinated with the Mayavad philosophy, and therefore has not the slightest shraddha for the actual deity form of the Lord, is thus an offender. Hence the expression, shraddha ye hate, where shraddha is used in the Srimad Bhagavatam to describe the Kanista Vaishnava. Right? With shraddha. The heart of the Mayavadi philosopher is contaminated by the false conclusion that the supreme absolute Brahman, the part of Brahman, is ultimately formless. On this basis, he falsely considers that the worshipful transcendental deity form of the Lord is ultimately a product of the imagination. Holding such tenets, how deep can his so-called shraddha be in the deity form? If for no other Vaishnava characteristic, then it is for being freed from the abomination of the Mayavad doctrine that the Kanista Adhikari has been awarded the status of Prakriti Vaishnava, a neophyte materialistic Vaishnava. Right? He's just free from the Mayavad concept, right, as a determination, as a goal. Therefore, he's awarded the position as neophyte. Right? So one is awarded that position. So that's the difference. The materialist doesn't have that faith. The devotee does, and it's free from the Mayavad. So that's then what establishes. On the strength of his minuscule Vaishnava quality, and through the mercy of a pure devotee, he is eligible to rise to the perfectional stage in devotional service. However, the genuine mercy of the Madhyama Adhikari, pure devotee, is indispensable for the further progress of the Kanista Vaishnava. And by such mercy, his deity worship and chanting can quickly become purified of their tainted, shadowy nature and acquire the true transcendental character. Right? You catch anything there? Anything interesting? Mention without the Madhyama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? Because the point is, you can say, no, but it's only by the Uttama that we can advance, but the point is, an Uttama is not going to talk to you. Because you're already advanced in his mind, so what's the need to talk philosophy? Right? So it's only the Madhyama. So now an Uttama is a Madhyama, that's your best. But a Madhyama, that's the next best. A neophyte is a Madhyama, that's, you know, next best after that. But it's only through the mercy of the preachers that any benefit will be gained. Okay, footnote 13. In the commentary of Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.47, it is stated, Srila Madhvacharya states, Acharyam eva samstitam Vishnum gyatva taranyatra naiva janati yat puman. A Kanishta Adhikari has no idea that the Supreme Lord has the power to exist outside a church or a temple. Right? Because once you leave that, then you're in the real world, you're just being practical. But the whole place, he's everything. If he's in every atom and between every atom, that means there's double him of what there is of material energy. Because right? Material energy is only the atom. But he's in the atom and between the atom.
And he is the material energy.
Yeah, so it's his energy. So just even as Paramatma, there's double of him as there is of the atoms. Right? So all there is Krishna. Yeah. All there is Krishna. Furthermore, being puffed up by his own ceremonial worship, Atmano Bhakti Darpata, a Kanishta Adhikari cannot imagine that anyone is more pious or religious than he. And he is not even aware that other devotees are more advanced. Thus he cannot understand the Madhyama or Uttama standard of devotional service. And sometimes, because of his false pride, he criticizes the more advanced devotees of the Lord, neglects them, or simply has no understanding of their exalted position as preachers or completely self-realized soul. Remember, this is Madhvacharya speaking, right? So this, we're talking some hundreds of years before, right? 700 or 800, like that. Yeah. So this is standard, you know, as neophytes then, as neophytes now. It's just the way neophytes are. Another symptom of the Kanista Adhikari, that he is infatuated by the material qualifications of so-called great materialistic persons, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're educated, they have money, they're politicians, they're great writers, they're great speakers, they're great, you know, how do you say, liberalists, you know, great, how do you say, organicists, right, you know, like that, you know, whatever it is, you know, there's something about it that, so they're enamored by that, infatuated. Having a bodily conception of life himself, he is attracted by material opulence and thus minimizes the position of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Such a Kanista Adhikari, therefore, is disturbed if a second-class devotee criticizes the Naman devotees of the Lord. Right? In the name of compassion or kindness, a Kanishta Adhikari approves of the non-devotional activities of such materialistic men. Read soft preaching. Because the Kanista Adhikari is ignorant of the higher realms of devotional service and the unlimited transcendental bliss of Krishna consciousness, he sees devotional service merely as the religious aspect of life. Right? Because only what you do in the temple, that's what he's afraid of. You don't want to talk about that. You don't want to introduce that. But because there isn't anything else, then what do you talk about with the materialist? Right? Vedanta is the universal. Krishna is everywhere, is in everything. That you can talk to anybody. Maybe you don't refer to the activities you do in the temple. That might freak them out. But the universal principle of Vedanta is not going to freak anybody out. Right? So, as they become purified, as they start to develop the faith, then they can appreciate the lifestyle of the devotee. But it's not that because you're careful about the lifestyle, you're also careful about the philosophy. They're two different things. The lifestyle is the application of the philosophy. But the point is, you have to understand it to apply it. So therefore, get them to understand first. Right? Otherwise, what's the big deal? Okay, he's rich, so what? What's so special? Why do I have to preach to him? He's just another guy. If it was an ordinary guy and I mentioned something and he went away, I wouldn't even think about it. But if the rich guy went away, I'd think, oh, that's a great loss. Why? What's the difference? Because I see the material qualifications. I think they're important. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, well, he could do so much for Krishna. But then the point is then you'd be speaking to both of them the same anyway. Because you'd understand, is okay, he can put, if it comes down to speaking to one or the other, I'll speak to the rich one because he has the potential to do so many more things. If there's a limit in time. But if there's not, I'll speak to both. It doesn't matter. And it's not because he's rich, therefore he's special. It's that he can do that kind of service because you need money. But it's not that the money itself is special or position as having money is special. That's not the... In the name of compassion or kindness, the Kanishtha Adhikari approves of the non-devotional activities of such materialistic men. Because the Kanishtha Adhikari is ignorant of the higher realms of devotional service and the unlimited transcendental bliss of Krishna consciousness, he sees devotional service merely as the religious aspect of life, but thinks that life has many enjoyable and worthwhile non-devotional aspects. Right? He can't tell the difference. The point is the Vedic system is all those enjoyable and worthwhile non-devotional articles are supposed to be brought in line with the devotional. That still doesn't make them any less enjoyable. Right? It means a person cooks nicely. He cooks nice, it tastes good, everybody likes his cooking. But if it's offered to Krishna, it becomes devotional. It's not offered to Krishna, it's Maya. Right? To be enjoyable or worthwhile doesn't mean it has to be non-devotional. Right? Does that make sense? The point is, but the only thing that defines that such materialistic things are enjoyable and worthwhile is the Vedic system, is the scriptures. Shastra will define how you deal with it because it is Krishna. Right? That's the whole point. Means all the atoms are Krishna's energy. To make it worthwhile that we're attracted, he's in the atoms and between the atoms. Right? And then the method means the forms that those atoms take, that is also by his laws. The ways you can deal with those atoms is also by his laws. Your attraction to it is also him. Right? And so therefore, Varnashram and the scriptures simply define how does he, in this form that you consider enjoyable and non-devotional, how do you deal with him? Because it is him anyway. The idea that it's not him, that's not so developed. That's not sambandhagyan. Right? So that's why the rules are there. Because we're worried about, what about me? Well, what about God? You know, I'm this and I want to do whatever I want to do. But who are you? You're the soul. You're not the body. You're not the controller of the body. You think you're the controller of the body, but you're not. The Paramatma has to do it. And what are you dealing with? It's also not you. It's also Paramatma. So therefore, how does Paramatma, as his potencies as your body, want to interact with the objects of the senses, which are him? So how does he want to interact with himself? That's what the scriptures define. Right? But we'll think it's all about us. No, I want to do, but they want to do. You know? Yeah. Therefore, he becomes angry when second-class devotees, who are experienced with Krishna is everything, criticize the non-devotees. Madhavacharya says that such a person, because of his rudimentary faith in Krishna, is considered a devotee, but he is a bhakta-dhamma, a devotee of the lowest standard. If such materialistic devotees follow the rules and regulations of deity worship, they will gradually be elevated to a higher standard, right, and eventually become pure devotees of the Lord. Unless they commit offenses against other devotees. In which case, their advancement will be checked. Okay. So in other words, this concept of, you know, kind of adjusting with the karmis and it's not so bad has been going on. At the time of Madhvacharya, it's going on. And he's not just saying nowadays like that. He's talking about it's just the way neophytes are. They've always done that. Right? So even Dwapara Yuga, they'll do that. Right? Where is it? Here. Oh, okay. So we'll end here.
Nothing is new, man.
Nothing is new. That's the whole point. You know, but we're thinking that it's new, it's fresh.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Chanditai Gaura. Would something like